start anyway. So by a presentation by Mr. Nagano from Japan on experience on a rural sewage treatment system. And this is a last-minute proposal, actually, and we are pleased to welcome you here. So you have, okay, let's say 7 minutes because, you know, people, they will come probably to present your experience.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So, good afternoon, everybody. Well, I'm presenting this. I don't know if there is a learning from Japan which can be applied in the context of this roundtable, but I think, well, the Japanese experience will give a diversity in the wastewater reuse, at least. So, well, Japan is not a water-scarce country. It's a water-rich country. And as you can see in this slide, the rural areas are, well, mostly the fields that you see here are paddy fields. And domestic water, wastewater from rural communities and the agricultural water from farmlands are used repeatedly in the downstream areas. So rice fields, rivers, and water channels perform self-purification function process in this way. So traditionally in Japan's rural area, human excreta was fermented and turned into manure, whereas gray water was released to waterways untreated. And after the World War II, as a result of Japan's rapid economic growth, there was a drastic increase of non-farmers' residency in rural communities. And this made a drastic increase in the inflow of sewage, except brown water, exceeding the natural purification functions. So there was a deterioration of agricultural water. And apart from that, the people's living standard, there was a strong demand from rural communities for flush toilets, which symbolized high living standard. So as a result, there are three strategies. So for densely populated city areas, city sewage treatment system, and for the rural communities, which are more sparsely populated, there was a special rural sewage treatment plant developed for this area. And for the sparsely populated area, the septic tanks are individually installed at each household. So this is how the rural, this is a good-looking rural sewage water treatment plant. It's not a restaurant, it's a sewage plant. And this has a capacity of treating the sewage from the inhabitant of 1,500 people. So if you look at carefully on the side, there's a treatment layer. So this is a typical treatment plant with a primary and secondary and tertiary treatment. And in Japan, even in the rural area, the chemical treatment is a must so that in the effluent, we don't basically find E. coli. So for the water treatment, we can expect around 270 liters per person per day. So from a community of 1,000 residents, there's a 200 to 300 cubic meters of treated water. And the water quality standard is set to BOD less than 20 milligram and SS less than 50 milligrams per liter. And actually, the water is much cleaner than this standard in many plants. And this is how the rural sewage water treatment plants increased in numbers. So this coincides with the time when Japan was enjoying its economic growth. Now we have a shortage of budget to build this kind of luxurious treatment plants. And for the reuse of treated water, sometimes it's directly reused, sometimes it's released to the waterways and goes into farmlands. So reuse rate is, well, by the statistics, it's 83%. And so in some water scarce area, it's directly put into the tanks and being irrigated. And the sludge, which are separated, are mixed with rice husks, and the fermentation is carried on to keep kill the bacteria. And the sludge fertilizers are applied in the fields. So the, as a result, recycling rate at the farms around 50%, and 20% goes into constructions, and there's a remaining 35. Okay, actually, this is the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
One or two questions? Yes, please. Okay, we need the microphone. So two questions. One here. Thank you.
Sorry. Can you talk about the cost of the treatment?
Yes, these kind of plants. I think this looks really nice. So it's around $2 million, I think, for one. Yes.
$2 million.
Yes, and it's heavily subsidized by the government. But actually, the management is overhanded to the rural community. So there's a group of people looking after this plant, yeah, for the regular management.
Okay. Another question.
How you are treating the sludge is not in the representation.
Sorry?
How you treat the sludge?
Sludge.
Yeah.
So there's a separation, a solid liquid separation. So it's a physical treatment, and after that. This is the slide. So it is concentrated first and mixed with other materials to easily form this kind of the particles. It's being fermented at high temperature to kill bacteria. Is it? Am I answering your question?
Okay.
Yes, this is energy is used for the heating. Yeah.
Okay, the last question. Yes?
I used to work in the sugar, I did some work in the sugar industry in South Africa, and we were thinking about using sludge, but then decided against it because one of our main importers was Japan, and it was felt that the people there wouldn't want to buy this sugar. So, but from your presentation, it seems the Japanese people are okay with growing food with sludge fertilizer?
Well, yes, for this kind of sludge, it's okay, I think. It's being accepted. But I don't think it's widely known by the people in the city.
Okay, thank you. Last question, short question.
Okay, I would like to ask you mentioned that the operation is being done by the community.
Yes.
Do you have any idea about how they manage this? How they can collect fees from people and how much the cost of the treatment of 1 cubic meter?
Okay. So, I don't have the figures with me, but if you have a septic tank in a household, the regular maintenance fee per year, each year is around $700 because you have to get rid of sludge, send it to the treatment plant. So when it is collective treatment facility like this, I think the cost is a bit less. But once in a month, they have to clean the filters and there is a regular management which has to be done by the community.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nagano, for this presentation.
Thank you.
I invite now. Unfortunately, we will not have any presentation from the Palestinian Authority because Mr. Sadi Ali failed in obtaining his visa due to some administrative trouble. So I propose to switch to your presentation, Philippe. So Philippe Kerholt from Altera Vereeningen, maybe you precise it, which will illustrate a project in arid and saline condition in Algeria.
Non, ça c'est le pointeur ici.
And I have 5 minutes only.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm Philippe Quérault. I work for Altera. So, does it work? Altera, and Altera is a research institute. It's very similar to Istria in France, if you want. It's part of Wageningen University and Research. It's a group including Wageningen University and five other research institutes, including Altera. So, a bit less than 5 minutes to discuss about this project, wastewater reuse for irrigation in arid region. The project was implemented in Algeria, so Algeria, Northern Africa, and more specifically in Ouargla. So in Ouargla, we are in the desert, less than 150 millimeters of rain per year. You will see in the pictures. So it's very easy. It's almost sunny every day and sand everywhere. So I try to fit existing document into the framework provided. You cannot see it. So the aim of the call, the aim of the project is to reuse treated wastewater and to make a demo to do some horticulture under greenhouses in the desert. We started with an existing treatment works. It is an aerated lagoon. It meets Algerian standards. All this water, so the capacity of the treatment works is 250,000 inhabitants. The desert is not empty. There are plenty of people. And this is a very rich area because it is one of the areas where you've got the most oil in the world, amongst other parts. So we have this water. This water is treated. And what do they do with the water? They have a 40 kilometers long canal. The water is in the canal. And it goes somewhere to a restricted area where I couldn't have access. So I don't know how it looks like over there. But the water, after it infiltrates naturally into the sand and into the ground. That is on the back of the lagoons. If you want the very far end of the lagoons, it's here. So this was the plot where we set up the greenhouses and the irrigation. So here, the source I'm going to read. The source is domestic wastewater. There is one originality here. In these parts of the world, the unconfined aquifer is saline, and it moves. And when you reach the surface, you have deposit of salt. The first aquifer is a saline. And the local authority 10 years ago decided to drain it and to bring it to the wastewater treatment works. So the wastewater treatment works, although it is domestic water, is constantly with 7 grams of salt per liter throughout the year. And that is very constant. So on top of the challenge to work with treated wastewater, we also have salt, a lot of salt. The crop used. Well, one of the challenge is to look at heavy metals. So we know the good guys and the bad guys in wastewater. We focused on heavy metals and on pathogens, Escherichia coli as a tracker. And one question that we had is, how does it work with contamination, potential contamination? And we have this view. Some plants are in the soil, so it's a root system or tubercule for the potatoes. So they have more or less a free leaf, and the surface area is exposed to potential contamination. Is the maximum of the of the crop. So that's why we tested beetroot and potatoes. Then we wanted to see what about the plants that lie on the ground. So we tested cucumbers. And we wanted also to test plants that do not have direct contact with water. And that is tomatoes, the fruit should not have should not be in contact, and lettuce. Also, because the biology is slightly different between a tomato that is a fruit and nature is fairly well designed, and there is no accumulation of heavy metals usually in the fruits, but in the leaves, and the leaves is the lettuce.
Philippe.
And we also tested the peas. One minute only. Okay, so I'm going to show you the pictures.
1 minute more.
Pardon?
1 minute more.
1 minute more. So here you can see the setup. So we've got 9 greenhouses. Why 9 greenhouses? Because we've got a treated wastewater. Treated wastewater with a tertiary treatment, nanofiltration. And as a control, we use what the local farmers use locally, groundwater. That is the result that we got after 2 months and a half. So the lettuce, excellent, we eat it. Tomatoes also. And I'm trying to go directly to the conclusion. Voilà. So these are beetroots. We had beetroots of 2.5 kilograms with treated wastewater. So in terms of conclusions, main conclusions is first we had lettuce growing on 7 grams of salt with no problem. And we think that all the organic matters added by the wastewater compensate the negative effect of salt. And there is probably some chemistry because it is a soil very rich in calcium that compensate the effect of the negative effect of salt. We found no accumulations of heavy metals in soil nor plants. No pathogen detected. This has to be confirmed, but yesterday and today there is also evidences of decay in irrigation system. We are using surface drip irrigation, not subsurface, but surface and not by aspersion. We think that we can have 2 to 3 harvests possible in the winter, starting from November up to May. Between May and September, it's 50 degrees. 50 degrees inside the greenhouses and sometimes outside. So, more conclusions. Nanofiltration, we demonstrated that remove heavy metals, pathogen, and salt, but remove too much, actually. We have much better results with treated wastewater than with wastewater that was polished with nanofiltration. We suspect that we have soil characteristic improvement thanks to the supply of NPK, but also of organic matter brought mainly by algaes. And we suspect, we would like to continue this study, and we suspect that we can actually improve soil fertility in this very poor soil thanks to the organic matter brought by treated wastewater. And there is such a big quantity of water in the desert. This water comes from fossil resources. It's something that we pump out and we dispose in the desert. And we would like to give a second life to this water. So through irrigation, and there are different ways we can irrigate vegetable, but also create agroparks in the desert. I think I exceeded the 5 minutes.
No problem. I will reduce the time for questions. Thank you very much, Philippe. So we can applaud. So from the pictures, we see here that even in very yellow environment, arid and saline, we can do something. And the value of water, we see exactly what it means. It means green, vegetables, production, etc. We can take one question or two. Two questions.
If you compare with the quality of water when you use nanofiltration and normal wastewater treated, what is the difference between the yield of your tomatoes or vegetable? What is it sufficient to use the normal wastewater, or you need nanofiltration, and what is the difference?
Because the soil is very poor, we didn't compensate and pick up. We just took what was or what wasn't in the water. We had excellent yields with treated wastewater, but once the treated wastewater goes onto a polishing system membrane, we try to play on the pressure because we wanted to remove heavy metals, but we wanted to leave salt, and in fact that we were not able to do that yet. So no NPK for crops, and we had some carence. And productivity with polished water with no filtration was disappointing, but not surprised, in fact.
Okay, one last question. Well, I have many questions, but maybe you had a question or... Okay.
Quelle était l'implication des fermiers locaux? Vous utilisez ça comme un site de démonstration. Ils étaient eux-mêmes à l'œuvre comme employés sur vos serres. Comment ça se passait localement?
Okay. May you translate the question?
I do both.
How the local farmers were implied? I mean, employed eventually, or just informed or demonstrated? What was their participation to the project? Right. I mean, local farmers. I'm not talking of Algerians hiring people locally.
I understood. On these pictures, there is some of us. There is also INRA. There is water managers, and there are basic workers, technicians, and they do have gardens on the other side of the cities. They do have here my I cannot see on this picture, but they do have gardens. Their brothers, for example, are farmers and really cultivating. So we went to see farms, and we involved them. We wanted to involve them formally at the beginning of the project, but that was not possible because not working for the Ministry of Water Resources, the farmers they. Well, they're not considered when you discuss in Alger. But I find my way around, and we went to visit some farmers, and we invited them over there. And some of the local workers are also farmers, and they have their own plot of land. So we discussed with them. All the plants were sourced locally.
Okay. Yes. The very last question, because I need to close the discussion. We have 4 presentations behind. Left.
Hi. Considering the fact that the oil drill will stop one day, what's the time scale of the project? You can say that, yes, we can do this technique during X years.
We can do this project as long as there are people drinking water, flushing the toilets, and so on.
But like you're not depending on the extracting oil?
No. We're not using processed water. I mean, it's a very good question because there are some other concepts about that. But that is domestic treated water. And Ouargla is currently 150,000 inhabitants. it is designed for 250. And they expect, in fact, huge growth because of oil.
Thank you very much. So let's continue with Pierre Savet, who will present a pilot scale close to this place in Mogio on the seashore.
Thank you, Nicolas. Now I will give you an overview on a research project that has been implemented just near of Montpellier in Mogyo, a research project on reuse. The name of the project is here, New Process for Optimizing Wastewater Reuse from Mogyo to the Mediterranean Sea. The goal is to create a prototype on site that could be replicated in a Mediterranean context, and also to propose a roadbook for the potential owners or deciders. We were 8 partners that are mentioned here on the slide. Industrials from university, community, and also research organism like STR, and a consultancy company like BRL. On this sketch, you can see the water treatment plant here. It is existing, and this is the site for the prototype here and the irrigation plot here. So on this slide, we have a sketch that represents the process that have been created. A very rustic process with sand filter storage for the filtering part of the process, and disinfection with ultraviolet. And another system with ultrafiltration membranes, storage with ultraviolet too. And the third one is a witness with raw water. The project has been involved for 4 years, from 2011 to now, and is about to be finished in 1 month. I go on. The objectives was to follow up water quality at each stage of the process and to consider the official French recommendation of 2010 and now 2014, and to assess sanitary and technological risk along the process and the network. We have made a lot of analysis on the physical chemical parameters, the bacteriological parameters, and also we have made some experimentations about pipe clogging on site, but not only on site, also in laboratory with ESTR testing in labo. You can see the cost of all the analysis here, so it is not it is a quite big amount of money. Also, we have made some inspection of the pipes by sampling. It was interesting to see the deposit within the network, within the pipe. As a result, I have on this slide, I have written the main results by observations and interpretations. In first, we could improve the knowledge of reuse system performance. We have observed a satisfactory water quality in respect of the stringent French regulation. It means that we could reach the quality A according to this regulation. We have compared the phenomena in drip and sprinkling irrigation. Also, for the drip irrigation, the phenomena between surface or subsurface drip irrigation. We could highlight the absolute necessity of cleaning the network every year, at least every year, but before the irrigation campaign, of course. We could have a better understanding on the water quality evolution inside the irrigation network. In conclusion, to have some recommendation for operation, maintenance, and also design in reuse irrigation project. Also, we could study other opportunity for other uses like road washing by making some tests in real real site. So, like I said, the project is not totally finished now. So, I cannot give you exact figures because we have to check everything within the consortium and after give the results in an official manner. So, I have some tendencies that I can give. In summary, the performance of the sand plus ultraviolet system is quite good. It means that we are able to make reuse irrigation with very rustic materials such as a sand filter and ultraviolet system. Of course, the ultrafiltration membrane is very efficient. It means that this kind of device is able in the same time to have a filter and for the disinfection as well.
Pour conclure.
Okay. In fact, it is the end. Another point: we have a poster in the main room in which the lunch was served. So you can have a look on the poster too. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we can take two questions.
One very simple. Did you get any results that you didn't expected before?
You mean if we have been surprised? In fact, we haven't observed biofilm in the pipes. We expect to find more biofilm, but. The irrigation network, the pipes, was quite a short network. And the time of experimentation is only two irrigation periods. We suspect that after five or 6 years, we could observe in biofilm in the irrigation network. And it is the observation in situ, but we have made also some tests in laboratory, and we could make some experimentation that prove that the biofilm can develop depending on the materials, depending on the hydraulic parameters.
Another question, Bruno.
I would just remind that what was explained will be the object of the visit tomorrow morning. You have seen that there are two technical visits. One is in the laboratory of Fierster, and the second is on this site. So if you are not registered, it is not too late.
Thank you, Bruno. I apologize. I was supposed to introduce this visit of tomorrow.
Okay, the last question. Yes.
Any local interest in your study? I mean, any anybody around 100 kilometers from Montpellier who would be interested to have a test in a farm, in a, any kind of real farming?
I am sorry, I haven't heard your question.
Any local interest in your project? I mean, any farm or farming institution or local authorities who would like your test, your system being tested in real conditions? I mean, with real farmers.
You mean here in around Montpellier?
100 kilometers around Montpellier.
Okay. In fact, Mogio is a little bit interested, not for irrigation, field irrigation, but for his gardens.
Les espaces verts.
Landscaping.
Landscaping. And also for the road washing. Okay. That's why we have made the test that I mentioned just before. But don't remember that it is a research project that may be replicated in other places around Mediterranean Sea.
So any
yes, potential interest. It's up to us now to finalize our work, and that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Pierre. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I know that this is a very intensive session, and you may be tired, but stay here because we have for the time. I mean, we have 45 minutes left, and we will have three presentations, one on the sludge from Jordan, one on the mine, what I understood is a drainage water from mine industries from South Africa, and economic and stakeholder approach in Morocco. And after the presentation, I will ask Akissa to make a synthesis, to try to emphasize her main comments, and maybe to point out the promising questions, and we could debate a bit on these questions. So please, yes, sir. So I invite Mr. Hayek Bassam from Jordan to talk about sludge management, actually.
Oops, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry. Yeah, I think you better close it.
Maybe there's a...
No, okay. That's not mine.
Should work.
But this is...
You don't have the same because there was a problem with displaying the picture.
Ah.
You have everything.
Oh, okay, but it's not the same that we started with. Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Nicolas. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So we have seen presentations from North Mediterranean and from South Mediterranean, and now I'm taking you a bit east of Mediterranean. You finish the east of Mediterranean, you cross a little bit and walk 50 kilometers or so, and you start with the Jordan River or Jordan Valley, where we have lots of water reuse and so on. But today I'm not talking about water reuse itself. I'm talking about another issue associated, which is the sludge or the biosolids potentials. Actually, I come from background. I'm working with the GIZ, the German Cooperation Agency or Society, and my focus is for the past about 2 years or so is on energy for water. So we try to look at the energy efficiency in water utilities as well as in reducing the cost of operations of utilities by energy savings mainly. And there comes the issue of the sludge and the potentials of reuse there. As you know, we have 29 or 30 wastewater treatment facilities in Jordan. If we zoom in on only the middle governorate, which is the areas of Salt, of Hayes, Madaba, whoever comes from our region would know these cities, you get around 6,000 tons of dried sludge per year only. And this is only for small municipal wastewater implants. The central wastewater implants, that's something different. Of course, it treats half of the population, the wastewater from half of the population of Jordan, and so it is outside our scope at the moment. We are focusing on decentralized approach for sludge management. The issue of handling sludge, as you may know, it will incur costs as well. And that is, for one example that you have seen here, that you see here, it's just costing like 300,000 euros, you can say, per year of GOD. The good euro, not today euro, the old euro, which was a bit better, 20% better exchange rate. So you say about 300,000 GD per year from small wastewater facilities only in the middle governorates. Therefore, we got to look at decentralized solutions because we have like 30 facilities like these, and decentralized or decentral approach for treating sludge. However, at the same time, when you look at the economics a little bit, treating sludge in decentralized wastewater facilities may be not economically attractive. And therefore, what happens in Jordan that we have the case where municipal solid waste is also poorly managed in municipalities and small cities. Therefore, we looked at the thing as integrated resource management. We are aiming at changing the perception of people that waste is waste, no, waste as a resource. And therefore, we're trying to deal with the situation as follows, where we have, for example, the sludge from wastewater treatment plants. I'm sorry, I'm not expert in using the pointer, so using the sludge from the wastewater treatment plants, and as well, you have the organic waste, organic solid waste coming from municipalities or small cities, which is just dumped in open pits, let's call it, a dump site, not lined, not sanitary landfills. Another idea is to use the livestock waste, the manure from cow farms or sheep and so on. That's also a potential, but scientifically probably there are some limitations there. Co-digest the whole thing, the mixture, in certain portions, proportions according to certain research studies, and then get a biogas, where the biogas can be reused in energy or electricity generation and feeds the wastewater treatment plants. In this way, you reduce the cost of operation of the wastewater treatment facility. And then the co-digester would, of course, with further treatment such as drying and disinfection, you get the nice compost, as we have seen from the paper or the presentation of Japan as well. So you get a nice, the good product, which can be reused afterwards in agricultural purposes or for soil conditioning, etc. So that's the concept. This is a starting project. It's just started 2 months ago. So I don't have results yet to share with you some figures and so on. But at least we are aiming at, as I said, digestion, generate electricity, and produce compost, which can be used as a soil conditioner. And that will require also modification of certain standards. There was a question about regulation and standard. That will require modification or upgrading of the pertinent standards for this case. Because in this case, we are not talking about biosolid standards, which is existing since 10 years or so, nor about ordinary organic manure standards, let's say, for agriculture. So this will be a new mix about that. And that hopefully will help reducing the kilowatt hours, the energy consumption in such water utilities. We're trying to look at the overall cycle and do a bit on everything. Pumping from the well field, for example, takes in Jordan because we have to dig wells and you have to extract water from deep wells, like 100 meters or more below sea level, and therefore you get to high energy costs. So 1 kilowatt for pumping from wells, around 1 kilowatt hour for transferring to certain reservoir and then the distribution, etc. Wastewater treatment also consumes kilowatt hours for treatment, roughly maybe 0.4 or 0.5 kilowatt hour, and therefore you end up as, you know, 1 cubic meter until it is used and disposed is consuming really roughly around 3 kilowatt hour per cubic meter. And therefore, worth looking at at this energy water issue, take into account the potential rises in energy costs. I mean, now they are down a little bit, but they can go up at any stage in the future. And that's what where we try to optimize the whole cycle as well. And this project comes as one demonstration how we can do that by utilizing sludge as a resource. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bassam. It reminds us that the sludge is maybe a key issue for water reuse management. Uh-huh. And what is very interesting in Jordan is that water reuse, I mean the liquid fraction of the wastewater, is a common and old practices, accepted practices in your
yes.
country.
Yes, yes.
But the still the sludge remains a problem.
The sludge
to
is still
as an
issue. Okay. Yes, exactly.
We can take two questions. Yes, Nassim.
Sorry, but the question about sludge, I have a question about your sludge. How you manage the pollutants inside this sludge, like heavy metal and some antibiotic inside your sludge? How you treat this this sludge before used then like fertilizer?
Yeah. Okay.
Because there is normally high concentration of this kind of pollutants inside. So
It depends on the area. It's a site-specific thing. In industrialized countries, you may have large, larger portions or concentration of heavy metals, toxic elements, etc. In less industrialized countries, such as it is in Jordan, especially when you go to decentralized wastewater treatment plants serving small villages or small cities and so on, the activities are pure, 90% domestic. I mean, with much less. Industries, and therefore you don't find higher elements or higher high levels of heavy metals or toxins that you are really concerned about. You may find in some. I did some tests in some. You may find emerging pollutants, the medical pollutants, hormones, antibiotics in some cities, and I pointed these out. And therefore, we have to be, yes, you have a point there, that we have to be careful of what you are using and reusing so as not to accumulate this in the future. But nice thing about this idea is that you are not only using the sludge itself, so it is a mix afterwards, okay? So it's not like you are not feeding the soil, let's say, or with the sludge, but it is really, if you like, it is further diluted with feed waste, food waste, organic waste, etc., which is should be coming as green waste from agriculture or purely food waste from big restaurants, whatever, universities, etc.
Thank you. One question. Yes.
So my question would be about social acceptability mm-hmm. of sludge recycling. It's not very easy in Europe, but I guess also in Middle East countries, it's not something very easy. And also dealing with social acceptability, I mistook, but I thought organic waste was also coming from households, or yes. It just comes from restaurants or food industry. Anyway, if it comes from households, then there is people awareness about selection of.
You touched an important point, of course. I'll start with the last one. The organic waste coming from the initial vision of the project, or the initial idea was that we take the organic solid waste from dump site. Now, when we are searching or looking for the exact location of our project, we probably will be a few kilometers away from a big university, major university in the south, Mu'tah University. And therefore, there is high generation from the dorms and from the restaurants. And probably will take just food waste, in other words, separated via contract and so on. And however, it would be good in the future to go to utilize the organic waste in dump sites, because actually what we have in such dump sites, like informal segregation happening at the dump site itself, with the scavengers doing the segregation, taking the precious elements, metals, anything recyclables, even plastic and papers and cardboards. What is left is the organic portion with traces of
here and there metals or plastic and so on. And unfortunately, that organic waste is being dumped and buried in dump sites, whereas the better thing was to use that organic waste to generate electricity somewhere else, of course, after doing further segregation, if I may. Now, back to the first question, which was acceptability, social acceptability. Yes, it is. We expect it would be concern to a certain level in the public. However, it is more of concern at the authority level, at the policy level. And that was a surprise when we started the project idea like a year ago. You find it more into the ministry, I mean, the concern coming rather more from the Ministry of Agriculture, okay? And therefore, we have to work on that track. We did during the preparation of the study, and at least we got a window now, a line of cooperation to allow us use the biosolid, we're talking about sludge, not even this, the treated biosolid for rangelands only, land reclamation of mines, etc. Goes without saying, but the for rangelands where you can improve the fodder production at least. So that's the new progress there. Although we had the sludge standards or the biosolid standards since 1999 and then another one 2006. It hasn't been, the reuse of sludge hasn't been practiced formally. And there were always issues with the monitoring and risk associated. Sorry if I took that too long.
No, but very interesting. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your presentation. So now we'll have a feedback from an experience in mine drainage irrigation. So I call Mr. Michael van der Laan, working from the Plant Production and Soil Science Department from the University in Pretoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So yes, I'll be telling you a little bit about our work at the University of Pretoria investigating the use of irrigation as part of an acid mine drainage treatment strategy. It's based in South Africa, in an African context, a relatively prosperous country, and this is largely because of the gold that was found in the Johannesburg region. Now the gold has been mined, the mining companies are mostly gone, and what we're left with is these large voids in the earth, these mining voids that have with time slowly filled up with water, and through interaction with the mineral surfaces have become, this water has become of a very bad quality, and it's now reaching a point where it's actually decanting out the surface. So our government commissioned a study to try to decide what to do with this water, and a group of engineers have now given their decision, and the decision is reverse osmosis. And the reason is because it's really a salt problem. So this water is very acidic, but it's a simple process to neutralize it with lime, and once you bring the pH up, you actually knock out the radioactivity and the heavy metals, but you're left with a very saline water. And because of where we are, there's no major rivers. There's not enough clean, fresh water to dilute this very salty water. But we've challenged this. It's going to be reverse osmosis. It's extremely energy intensive. It's expensive. So we're a country with energy problems, with a lot of socioeconomic problems. And we feel it's sort of questionable whether they should take this moral high ground to say we're going to remove every last pinch of salt from the water. And so we're actually investigating the use of irrigation. How it works, it's a really simple technology. You irrigate specifically with calcium sulfate-rich water. Not all mine water is calcium sulfate-rich water, but you irrigate with calcium sulfate-rich water. The plants take up 80 to 90% of the water, but only 6 to 7% of the salt. So you actually concentrate the salt in the soil profile, and you get the precipitation of gypsum. So it's your calcium and your sulfate precipitating out as gypsum, and it's effectively removed from the water while still using this water in a productive way to grow crops. The one drawback is that your more soluble salts are not removed. Okay, so we're looking at about 54 million cubic meters per year. We're suggesting that soybean and wheat will be the best crops because they're relatively salt tolerant, and it's about 12,000 hectares that you can irrigate. The cost of a cubic meter, similar to a previous speaker, it's about 0.35 cents. That's in euros. South African law, you're only allowed to sell any water, no matter what quality it is, at the maximum of the potable water price. So we're just treating with lime, and almost counterintuitively, the highest demand for water to be able to treat this water will be in winter because it's a summer rainfall region. So when it rains, we won't actually be able to irrigate and treat this water, and we need storage capacity. And what we're proposing is to actually use these mine voids themselves and just be able to manipulate the depth of the water in the mine voids. You can see we don't have black or gray water problems. It's actually orange. So this is actually the safe stuff because it's decanted and it's been naturally neutralized by the geology. But you can imagine the public outcry when this water started coming out of the ground. It's actually the crystal clear stuff, this pure, beautiful crystal clear water, that's the dangerous one because that's still got the pH of 2 to 3 and the radioactivity and the heavy metals. Based on 15 years of field trials, we used our calibrated model for this water quality. We ran a 50-year simulation, and what we're looking at is over that 50-year period, about 900 tons of salt being added per hectare. That's this red line. But gypsum precipitation, so that's your knocking out of calcium and sulfate, will actually remove close to 70% of the salts. So this is using the water in a productive way to grow food in a food insecure region, as opposed to very expensive reverse osmosis. We believe it's going to cost 430 million euros for infrastructure, and then 60 million euros a year running costs indefinitely. To conclude, yes, we think irrigation could and should be part of a mine water treatment strategy. Of course, the quality of the water, it's not the silver bullet solution. It depends on the quality of water, how effective it'll be. Potentially cheaper, low environmental impact compared to reverse osmosis. With reverse osmosis, you're also left with this toxic sludge that needs disposal or value add. But what we like about irrigation is you're using soil, which is just such a wonderful bioreactor to actually deal with these different constituents that could be pollutants. Our economist tells us that a 40-hectare farm could realize a profit of approximately 15,000 euros per year. And in South African terms, that's quite a bit of money. Wheat, soybean would be appropriate. You will not get away with crops like maize and carrots with this water. The profile salinity will just be too high. And then the final message is just that the geohydrological setting is important. So what we're proposing there is perhaps to irrigate over a underlying contaminated aquifer. So any salts that are getting through are actually just going back into the polluted groundwater, or to put an acid mine drainage irrigation scheme in a sub-catchment where all the return flows report to one point, that you can actually intercept them and then apply reverse osmosis. So you're actually you're treating a much smaller volume via reverse osmosis and potentially saving a lot of money. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, and I just want to acknowledge the Water Research Commission and the National Research Foundation of South Africa.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm sure that there is one or two questions. Short question, please. Jacques.
I have a question about, I don't know, maybe you already spoke about it, but about salt accumulation in the soil and the risk of soil sterilization.
Yes, a good question. So because of the quality of this water we're irrigating with, the calcium sulfate will precipitate, and then that won't add to soil salinity. But the 30% of your sodium and chloride, magnesium, that could be a problem. So you will need a leaching fraction. In this case, a 10% leaching fraction was adequate to maintain a soil profile saturated paste EC of about 260 millisiemens per meter.
Okay. Bruno?
In South Africa, Pivot is very popular, so sprinkler.
Okay. Thank you.
And you have sprinkler also?
No, we haven't. We haven't had problems with that in our field trials. Perhaps to some extent there will be, but not to an extent that it's actually influenced the system. Not with the water qualities. I didn't show a water quality, but it's about 4,000 TDS, sorry, and about 700 milligrams per liter sulfate, 400 calcium, and it's fine. There's no clogging.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So we'll finish the round for presentation by Pierre-Louis Maillot from CIRAD and UMRGO, who will talk about a pilot scale project in CETAT in Morocco.
So, hello everyone, I'm Pierre-Louis Maillot from the CIRAD, and I've been based in Morocco for a year now, and I'm pretty much a newcomer in the reuse field, so excuse me if my technical expertise is still fairly limited, and I'm learning a lot here, but actually I'm a political scientist and a sociologist, so I'm more interested first in the governance and the policy making aspects, dimensions of reuse, and second, also on the public acceptance, social acceptability aspect of the reuse, especially with the farmers. So here in this presentation, I will focus more on the second aspect, meaning the public acceptance and social acceptability aspect. But still, I'm a newcomer. I'm in the learning process. Hopefully, my learning curve will be steep, but we'll see. So one of the cases I've been interested in Morocco for only a few months now, is the one in Stadt, which is a city 70 kilometers south of Casablanca. It's a city of approximately 170,000 inhabitants, and it's growing rapidly. And what I will present here is just our very preliminary impressions on my case, because I've started study the case a few months ago only. So basically, it's not very apparent. Yeah, the wastewater treatment plant was started to being built in 2003. It was completed in 2006. The process is lagooning. It has a treatment capacity of 4 million cubic meters per year. And it's purely domestic wastewater industries in the city are not connected to this plant. And so in 2006, after the station was completed, the first studies were carried out to see if we could use part of this water for agriculture downstream. And so finally, a site of 300 hectares was selected, 8 kilometers downstream. And so the public works started in 2010, conducted by, supervised by the local administration of agriculture. And it was completed last year, so it's just been a year in operation now. And so basically the crops are maize, mostly wheat, fodder, but also vegetables such as potatoes and some olive trees as well. We also have a transition going on to drip irrigation, from gravitation to drip irrigation, which is part of a national policy in Morocco to convert to drip irrigation. So, well, I've stuck to the template. So basically what are the lessons that can be learned for now for me after just a few months? Well, in Morocco in general, the overall institutional framework is not very conducive to reuse in general. So the institutional legal frameworks are still very incomplete regarding the status of treated wastewater, for instance. There is also, which is very usual in the field, a very large amount of actors, of stakeholders intervening, involved. So that's not a very, very conducive context in general, not a specifically conducive context. What seems to be striking, because there has been remarkably little controversy over the project. I mean, the first interviews have been carrying out. I've had a strong impression of strong consensus over the project, so it was interesting to understand why exactly. And my impression is that the project grew endogenously from existing social arrangements. What I mean by social arrangements, first, are the existing networks of people knowing each other for a long time, and also some common sense shared perception that there was a water problem in the area, and that the treated wastewater, the reuse of treated wastewater, could be a solution, could be part of the solution to this problem. And so it took some time. It built on a long time of building trust between various actors during some time at various levels. So first, we have a good historical relationship between state, local technicians, and farmers. So I won't enter into the details. But we have a center for technical assistance from the Agriculture Administration in the city. It's been there for decades. And it has a very good relationships, apparently at least, with farmers. And we also have a local university with many local researchers working closely from the region and working closely with the farmers over the last decade as well. So we have this trust. Trust has been built over at least three decades. And, well, aquifer overdraft has long been recognized as a problem in the region, especially because we're in a region of many small farmers. So there are small owners, small farmers, and they cannot drill like deeper than, let's say, 40 meters to have groundwater. So the depletion for small irrigated areas that are in the area, the depletion of the water tables is really an important problem for farmers. Untreated wastewater has been widely used over two or three decades, and it's been widely perceived more and more as a problem. So it was perceived as a problem, especially due to the advocacy of local researchers at the local university, who really managed to show to farmers that the aquifer was really getting some of this untreated wastewater, and that it was polluting and contaminating the aquifer. So it's been two or three decades of workshops organized in at least 1992, 1993 with farmers, et cetera, et cetera. And also we have had a users association set up to manage the perimeter, and this user association seems to have closely matched former community and family ties, family linkages, and tradition of shared work also. So basically the idea here, at least my preliminary impressions, is that the project really grew upon some strong relationships between actors and trust that have been built over time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions, please.
Yes.
There's a sort of paradox of what you said, because you say on one side that there is de facto reused and tolerated over several years of treated, even non-treated, untreated wastewater. I suppose it's in another place of the place where the groundwater is too deep to be exploited. So I can't get the kind of social arrangement you mentioned. Can you be a bit more clear about that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have the untreated wastewater was rejected in the river nearby, so it was mixed with the water of the river. And so, of course, you had the users nearby the river who was using this mixed water. And just 2 or 3 kilometers away, you had all the farmers, and you're right, all the farmers using groundwater. And, of course, they know each other. They know each other very well. They're from the same families. There are many organizations, the GEMA, which is the local community. The rivers were polluted. The river was polluted.
Okay, we can... Bruno?
Another question. Maybe I didn't follow, but you didn't speak about the reaction of the society. I mean, you are speaking about the acceptance of farmers, about the, I would say, the technical sphere. And what about the social sphere? I mean, the citizen from the city that could consume the product.
Well, it's still I'm still unclear about this. What I know is that social awareness of this issue has been growing fast in Morocco over the last year. The last years, one of the important thing was a documentary that was very, very popular, widely seen, widely watched in Morocco about mint. And it was because mint in Morocco, most of the mint is irrigated by untreated wastewater. And now all Moroccans only speak about the problem with mint and the polluted mint, and it's very important in Morocco, of course, you put it in tea. So it's kind of a symbol of the national identity, which appears as impure, problem of impurity. So this documentary was in 2006, and I think over the last 10 years, there's this... Now when you speak with the Moroccan people, they know about this issue of untreated wastewater, at least in this.
Thank you, Pierre-Louis. Thank you very much. So we are at the end of the presentation, and if you don't mind, I will pass it over to Akissa to try to synthesize, to point out the main ideas from what you heard during this session. And probably we will have, a couple of minutes or more, if you have time, to discuss on this question, to have additional discussion.
Thank you, Nicolas. It's not easy to try to summarize this 12 presentation that I just heard. But I just would like to say first that we had about 12 presentations, mostly from Europe, Asia, and North Africa. We didn't have from Latin America any. And we had a breadth of different experiences, as you have seen and heard, using different sources of water, from ablution water in Djibouti to domestic water, industrial water, agro-industrial, a mix of industry and domestic, acid mines. So we had really, very large scope of different water qualities and different sources of water. Different kind of uses also, from using water for irrigate fodder crops, cereals, vegetables, and the question is not the same when you use different kinds of crops. We went from no treatment, like in Djibouti, where just ablution water was being used for irrigation, for hydroponics, and so on, to very advanced treatment and some things in between, like the experience in France, and advanced treatment using membrane nanofiltration, disinfection, reverse osmosis, and so on. So again, really a large breadth of examples. We had also the rural sewage treatment plant from Japan, so which was, I think, quite interesting because we were, also this is very important to see how, we deal with water in the rural areas. We had also the areas that they were irrigated were from few square meters to, several hectares. Most of them were rather pilot scales. It was not, they were going through the full scale, but we are still missing really experiences where we have some return of experience in order to see what really is happening. And so potential, for example, in Setat is about, in Morocco is about 300 hectares, but in Algeria it was 1.11 hectares. So you see, it is really something that South Africa, potential of 12,000 hectares. So we see that there is quite a large potential, and we are in between, as I said, between pilots and full scale. What was important, I think, that storage was very often mentioned. We know how much storage is important when we deal with irrigation, and it is really a buffer where a lot of things happen from the point of view of water quality, and this has to be monitored quite carefully, what happens from the wastewater that enters, or, I mean, that we are going to use up to the treatment, storage, and irrigation, and then the crops. So we had, I mean, we saw that there was very often this multi-barrier approach that was set in place from the treatment, irrigation, storage, and so on. So that was different irrigation techniques, sprinkler irrigation surface, drip subsurface. It was, I was a little bit frustrated not to hear what was happening. You know, that was some experience about from France, but we didn't hear what was, you know, from the subsurface, surface, drip irrigation, and so on, or sprinkler. What were, I mean, we didn't have any figures or analysis that would help to make have a better understanding of what was happening. We heard also about the problem of social acceptability, not that much, but still, I mean, this was touched upon about existing social arrangements in Morocco, and about, question was raised about consumer of products, what the social awareness of the consumers, and so on. We heard about also resource recovery of water, nutrients, electricity, and compost. I think it was quite interesting to hear about what's happening in Jordan and in Japan, not only about water and nutrients, but also the use of sludge, and we can recover, I mean, make use of that for producing compost and electricity. These are the things, as I said, that have been touched upon, and that have things that I think that were not enough highlighted in the presentations, were about, you know, the institutional and legal framework. It was just mentioned in the presentation on Morocco that it was incomplete, but in most of the cases, we haven't heard how this was organized, and this is very important, you know. Wastewater is really a water resources management issue, and you have to deal with so many institutions, and because, I mean, you have the, I mean, who is producing, I mean, the wastewater, which would be the city or the industry or so on, and then the treatment, and then the farmers, and then who is taking care of the storage. It involves a number of actors, and we need to have really some coordination, exchange of information, and unless we have this institutional framework put in place and the legal framework, I think that this is something that it would have been interesting to hear more about. We heard about the standards, and this was, I mean, discussion ongoing since yesterday, and I think this is also, as I said, the core question, because, I mean, even though there was a debate with Mr. Lopez about the standard and that we might not have ever, I mean, in Europe, I mean, a guideline or for water reuse, but I mean, there are still a number of water quality, I mean, guidelines, and there is a need for harmonization, we like it or not. Because there is some contradiction between what bathing waters, irrigation, we don't know at all, there is no at all, and why should there be a such stringent standards for water reuse and not for irrigation, you know. So there are some contradictions. I think that needs to be highlighted, and this, in fact, what led WHO to come up with new guidelines. So it's important to keep this in mind, and why should we have very stringent standards, what it is not needed, I mean, where we remove nitrogen or phosphorus. The cost of monitoring was mentioned. I think it was quite interesting to hear that it was about 70,000 euros for cost of monitoring. I think this is also something very important to keep in mind, because standards are related to monitoring. standards are related to the capacity of a country to do this analysis. If you don't have the laboratories, you don't have the people that are skilled, you can't do it. You can't. So the question is not that the government decides no risks. Do they have the capacity to monitor? I mean, it was mentioned in the presentation about Egypt that this discrepancy between Netherlands and Egypt. Egypt cannot afford to have such stringent, standards. They cannot implement them. So what is the need, standards that you cannot implement? It is just on the paper, but they are not going to be implemented, never. So I think it's very important. It's a question of common sense very often. I've been working on some standards for with François Brissot for the Mediterranean area. It was quite interesting. There are, a way to go, to do it, for depending on what we want to achieve. And reuse should be the starting point always. What do we want to irrigate? I found that very often in the presentation, the focus was very much on the process rather than, the reuse. What do we want to achieve? What this water is going to be used for? I want to know how much are we going to produce? How much would be the increase of the income of the farmers? Are we really using this water for poverty alleviation or not? So this is something that was a little bit missing. It was too much focused on the technology, on the processes, and less on, irrigation, what for, to produce what? What was the quality that we were producing? What was the risk for the farmers or for the users? I think this was a little bit missing. We didn't hear enough about, cost and benefit. We heard about, the cost. It was interesting. I just glanced through some of the presentation. The cost of treatment was varying for the one that mentioned it between 0.2 and 0.42 euros per cubic meter. It's important to have this figure in mind. But then, is it something that we can afford? So this is a question of coming back to what we can go for very highly treated, but then can we afford it? It's a question of affordability. I know a country like Tunisia cannot afford. We have decided to have, for example, secondary treatment all over the country and to do, in some cases, disinfection or UV, but not to generalize. It's not possible. The country has not the money. So we should talk about things that matches the level of the development. It's a step-by-step approach, reuse. This is what we have to understand. So there was something that was also important. We focus very much, and also, of course it's an ICID conference and it's about agriculture, its use of wastewater or treated wastewater or water reuse for agriculture purposes. But it has to be put again in a much larger scope using, if this water, and this is what happened, for example, in the U.S., regulation, they didn't talk in the beginning about potable water. Now they saw that they are pushing so much on the level of the treatment that, it doesn't make sense to treat this water that highly and then to irrigate crops. You can drink this water. So you see, it's a question, again, of putting this. So to put this within the scope, is it agricultural when we do this kind of treatment? Is it better to use this for groundwater recharge, for industrial uses? So to open a little bit the scope and to put the agricultural use within, among the different kind of uses and to see what is make more sense economically from the point of view of the options. This is something that also I think that I'm just, from my own experience, I have seen in Tunisia we have been focusing very much on agricultural reuse when there were a little bit on groundwater. There were some studies on different kind of, road washing or landscaping. We do a lot of golf course irrigation. So we have to use, to look a little bit, and it is irrigation, landscape irrigation, or golf course irrigation is also irrigation. So you see, understand a little bit, because it's a question of return on the investment. This question of economic approach is very important, and we have to understand it's a question of risk and economy. So it's a trade-off, but we have to... So these are the things that I came to my mind during very interesting presentation, and I'm just giving you, feedback just... on the spot. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this brilliant synthesis. You like to add a few words, Samia?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, actually, Dr. Akisa covered everything, yes, but maybe I repeat some things again. We heard very wide experiences today, and it was what not expected to hear, yes, about experiences in Europe, in France and Italy. And all these experiences which we hear today are even experiments or at very small scales in gardens or projects which run by donors or very informed researchers and so on. Therefore, everything was okay, and it was we didn't find any major constraints or problems. But we didn't touch the countries who have policies for that at the policy level, yeah, because at these cases you can find huge problems, yes, institutional and financial and even social and so on. It's pity that we didn't present, yes, our experience in Egypt, because we use, yes, sewage water at big scale, yes, as Dr. Akisa mentioned, not only in agriculture, but in landscape and in golf areas and even in fish farms and in groundwater recharge. But we have a lot of institutional problems. The major problems are how we can cooperate with different stakeholders and how we can apply or how we can modify our regulations and the rules, yes, to fit, yes, with our possibility to treat this water. And also we want to hear something today about the involvement of private sector, how the private sector can play a role in that. Because we have an example in Egypt, we have now resorts where private sector take the responsibility to treat water and use it for landscape. And when they have more water than their requirement, they sell it to their neighbors with a very high prices, with the rich people who are living in these areas. This is some of the examples. At the end, I would like to thank you all very much. We heard a lot of experiences, and of course, we learned a lot. And we hope that we can find another opportunity to present the issues which we couldn't cover today. Thank you.
So we are on time, 5:30. But I wouldn't let you leave with a frustration. And so if you have any question, as far as I'm concerned, I have time. If you want to stay a few minutes more to ask question, please do it. And after, I have two information to give you.
Hello. Philippe Cureau, it's more a comment and then I will put it as a question. We talk about social acceptability, like if it is a black hole, a black box, something, we put everything inside. But just today we saw some projects are working like in Jordan, in Morocco, elsewhere we have more difficulty. When we think about acceptability, social acceptability, there is acceptability of the local farmers, and you say in your introduction, 80% of the crops we find in the market in developing world is already done using untreated or sometimes treated wastewater, but most of the times untreated, diluted. So that is the case. So farmers' acceptability, is that really a problem in developing world? I don't know. In Europe, it's something else. And other parts. Then there is accessibility, we saw, of ministers. Ministry of Water, it's not the same thing as the Ministry of Agriculture. Apparently they don't live in the same planet and they don't communicate. There is the Ministry of Health, indeed. The acceptability of the staff working in ministries is super important, because as you say, sometimes your regulation is more stringent in Egypt than in the Netherlands. And there is a cost of can we afford it? So maybe we need to tune what we want to do, what is possible, and with the reality, because it is already happening. And then there is the acceptability of the end users. But if we let, if the ministries put a regulation that align the existing practice with some safeguard decreasing the risk and not dreaming of zero risk, maybe we might be able to make more and more small demonstration case and convince people of better practice for reuse. So to put it in a way is, shouldn't we differentiate between acceptability of the decision maker and acceptability of the practitioner and the end user?
Another comment?
Yes, I was much interested by all day this afternoon because I couldn't attend going on with drip irrigation in another place. I wanted to know if I noted that the frame of these presentation was common to all the presentation with specific items. How I try to understand. I think you are a sort of working group behind that thing in ICID structure. I don't know exactly what, but I don't mind. Would you intend to exploit the what is written by each project in these items, just to make a sort of presentation of the whole thing, which will be more digestible for myself? Mm. Well, that's a question open.
So I can answer, because the working group, actually, this is two persons, so it's not ICID working group. So we had the opportunity to have 3 hours with professionals. So the idea was to focus more on experience. And for that, we decided to generate this template in order to understand well what was the water reuse chain, even very technological chain or very low energy or rustical chain. And then to emphasize, I mean, to focus on these two questions. How we can securize the water reuse project, or how you can valorize low-treated wastewater. So to answer your question, I would like to thank you, the three rapporteurs that you have here. They didn't take a coffee break, so they are writing everything for more than 3 hours. And from this and from the presentation, it is planned by the ECID organizing committee. Okay. I don't belong to this committee, but to generate, to write something, probably, how to say, a collective paper, to digest what are in the slides, and to try to publish something more clear and more, more understable, actually. But I'm not really sure that it will happen. I hope so, but I'm not really sure it will happen. This is the objective.
Okay. If I may say, add something, you know, I'm in charge of the Dictionnaire de l'Académie de l'Eau, which I insist will be in two languages, French and English. I'm not going to explain you what is this dictionary, but it's a very ambitious project based on linguistic treatment and ontologies. But I'm sure now that one theme will be decisively choiced as water reuse, and not wastewater treatment to drink it or whatever you would like. Water reuse is the key word, so thank you for that key word, which will be translated into French.
Thank you. Another comment, Bruno and Mr. Lopez.
It's part of the answer that you were giving. In fact, at the closing session tomorrow afternoon, we will have to present in 15 minutes. But if you ask a question and you don't listen to the answer, it will be complicated.
This is an answer to your question, sir. So, hello.
And so tomorrow there will be a short presentation of the outlines of the two sessions, the two scientific sessions of yesterday afternoon and today's morning, and for the round table. This is part of the answer to your question. And the second, I forget it. So I give you the...
So tomorrow, a closing session. It is open to everybody. Huh? It's a public session. And probably after, you will have some something, you know, report, paper, or something like that.
So we are all tired, but at my age, my role is to warm up the situation. So the first consideration is that if you put on the screen your slides with your questions that you put this morning, I don't know how many answers we have at this time of the meeting to your question. Just as a witness of the complexity of the problem. The second remark is that you said that in Europe we will provide guidelines. Guidelines are not standards. Guidelines don't compel anything to be respected. I agree with your comment. Why we put some standards that we are not able to monitor? I totally agree with
you. Yes, I can answer this. This is actually come from the conflict between the stakeholders. Because, for example, Ministry of Health, okay. Yeah, they refused completely to adjust the laws. Okay. Yeah. Right. And the Ministry of Housing, who are dealing with treatment, they cannot offer this very high tech, yes, okay. Don't have enough budget.
I totally agree. Yeah. I agree with also this conflict between the different ministries. I totally agree. It's my experience. Then you made a remark. Most of the presentation dealt with the technology, yes. And a few with the farmers or with from the agricultural side. And this is another proof that the lobby of the plant constructors is much more stronger than the lobby of the farmers. Think sure. This, because we sometimes try to, okay, I think yes, in this. And then, once again, about the risk acceptance. I usually, to my student, I present a very simple graph. You put in a diagram the risk acceptance in this sense and the social economic development of a country in this sense. When the risk is accepted is high, the social economic development very low, and the contrary from the opposite side. I will give you just one example. Some years ago, we have all over Europe and all over the world this illness of the aviaria. It was the chicken. You know, we burned thousands and thousands of chicken in Europe. North Korea sent a letter to the Brussels. I was in this committee there, asking to have the chicken there. They take the risk of the transmission of aviaria from man to man. So once again, this is a very complex solution, and once again, it's site-specific. It's site-specific in Egypt, it's site-specific in Morocco, in Tunisia. Don't try to find a solution good for everybody. It's a wrong direction, this one. Okay, but.
Someone else?
Okay, and yeah, so I get back what I wanted to say after. One information, or at least two informations. One information, there is an ISO technical committee which is dedicated to wastewater reuse, in which a synthesis of the existing classification of water qualities that are listed in the different regulation in the world has been analyzed, trying to get out with a common framework of the definition of quality. There is, as far as I remember, 6 water qualities from raw water or roughly treated water to the water which is used in the US with residual chlorine in and so on, which is not very far from potable water. This is the first information. The second information, but I have to, I don't have any detail, but I have been told that there is a plan for issuing a special booklet dedicated to the outcomes from these different sessions. So probably many of you will be contacted directly to be proposed to write a paper in this special issue. And the last point was about dictionary. There is a dictionary in the ICID which have been updated about when was it, in 2003 or 4 or something like this, that could no need. And last point, the ISO has also edited standards of definitions that apply to irrigation and water management, generally speaking.
Okay. Maybe we can close this session. So I would, on behalf of the organization committee, I would thank you, Samia and Akisa, to be here this afternoon. Thank you very much, all of your contribution. One last information is that if you want to be sure to receive the PDF files of the presentation, the best way maybe is to give me your business card now, and we will send you the presentation or hyperlink to download this presentation if you're interested in. But it is also on the Congress website, but probably not the last version. So to be sure to get the last version, do not hesitate to put your business card here. And thank you again for the rapporteur, and I wish you a pleasant night in Montpellier. Hope to see you soon. Thank you very much.
Qu'ils ont été parachutés, c'est pas ce qu'ils devaient faire, donc ils ont même pas les ordi et tout.